Welcome to The Bitter Witness.
Don't be scared.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Rebecca, and I'm your host for The Bitter Witness. How was your week? I hope you're staying well. I have received tons of feedback about the microphones, and apparently there's not much of a difference between the two. So this week, I'm just going to stick with the new one, because it seemed to work. I'm also getting better with this editing thing, so hopefully we can get some more consistency in the sound this week as well. Just bear with me, people. I'm new at this. I have yet to figure out how to get the podcast up on Apple Podcasts, but it is available almost everywhere else. So on whatever platform you're listening to, please give us a 5-star review. It really does help the show. Also, please visit our Patreon page and become an eyewitness. Starting this week, if I can figure out how to do it, Bitter Bits will be available for all those who are part of the eyewitness tier. These are shorter episodes that will contain cases where there really wasn't enough information available for a full show. Other Bitter Bits will take a criminological or theoretical look at the issues from some of our cases that we have had on the podcast. So, if you enjoy the show and you're jonesing for more, here's an opportunity to help you get through the week. The dogs are sleeping behind me. I'm sure you can hear Miley snoring in the background, but considering she is a red tick coonhound, let's all be thankful she's not barking. Get a hound dog, they said. So, grab a cup of tea, sit back, and relax, and let's dive into the case this week. This week, we are going to look at the case of John and Lorena Bobbitt. Trigger warning, we will be discussing domestic violence and substance abuse. As always, I want to give the victims in our case top billing. Lorena, I acknowledge you and I send my love to you wherever you may be. Lorena Gallo was born on October 31st, 1970 in Bouquet, Ecuador, and was raised in Venezuela in a middle-class working family. She states that she always wanted the American dream like she would see on TV. In 1986, her family immigrated to the USA. After a while, her family decided to move back to Venezuela, and Lorena decided to stay and attend school. She received a student visa and attended Northern Virginia Community College. She also found herself a job working at a nail salon for a friend of hers. John was born in 1967 and grew up in Niagara Falls, New York. His father was completely out of the picture, and at age 3, he was taken away from his mother, who had substance abuse problems. He and his two brothers were sent to live with his aunt and uncle. According to John, he grew up with a big family and went to church every Sunday with them. When he was of age, John enlisted in the Marines because a bunch of his friends were also enlisting in the Marine. In 1988, Lorena attended a Marine Corps officer's ball with friends for a singles night. There, she met John. John states that Lorena was quite shy and didn't speak very much English, but the two started dating after that first meeting. On June 18, 1989, John and Lorena were married. According to John, Lorena proposed to him because her student visa was about to expire and she wanted to stay in America. According to Lorena, John proposed to her with her mother present. Lorena stated in an interview, quote, "He was a handsome man in uniform. Who wouldn't want that?" unquote. The two had a small ceremony performed by a justice of the peace, and the newly married couple settled down to begin their life together in Manassas, Virginia. According to Lorena, the domestic violence started very soon after the marriage began. Lorena states that John would be emotionally abusive as well as physically abusive, kicking, hitting, and punching her. According to Lorena, the first time that John physically abused her was while they were driving home one night. John started driving erratically because he had been drinking, and Lorena told him to stop, and when she grabbed the steering wheel, that's when John punched her for the first time. Lorena also states that John would become angry whenever she questioned him about how much money he was spending or why he would be bringing friends home to stay over at their house to drink without letting her know in advance. According to John, he never intentionally hurt Lorena physically or mentally. He stated that if he ever actually did physically hurt her, it was because she was attacking him and he was trying to either restrain her or defending himself. Side note here, I don't know who's lying in this case. I know someone is, but I wasn't there, so I can't say for absolute certainty who's lying. But I will say this, John saying that if he ever physically hurt her, it was because he was trying to restrain her or defending himself, is a very common statement made by perpetrators of domestic violence. They take the blame off of themselves and put it onto the victim. As well, playing devil's advocate, I seriously doubt that inside that car that night, Lorena calmly told John to stop driving like a maniac. I think she started yelling at him because of the way he was driving, and the fight escalated from there, ending in her grabbing the steering wheel and him punching her. I'm not justifying what happened, but that's my opinion. I've worked with a lot of domestic violence survivors, both while they were being abused and after they left the relationship they were in. I've also read many academic articles regarding this topic, and one of the things I have found in maybe 98 out of 100 cases is that the victim is always able to recall the very first time they were abused physically, and always in great detail, no matter how many years have passed since the incident. It's just something that is imprinted on their brain. Now remember, this is just my personal observation from years of experience in this field. I have no scientific data to back that up, just something I've noticed. According to Lorena, she became pregnant in 1991. John forced her to get an abortion. According to John, the couple agreed together to terminate the pregnancy. Lorena testified in court that while they were at the abortion clinic, John told her that she was going to die while having the abortion, that the needles they had to use were so big that they would go through her bones and she would die. Lorena also testified that she was crying while John was saying these things to her, and he was laughing. It got to the point that a nurse came out to the waiting room to inquire what was happening because Lorena was so visibly upset. Lorena told the nurse that she wanted John to be away from her, and the nurse took her to another room. Lorena testified that she was racked with guilt after the abortion, which physically affected her greatly. She testified that she was sleepy, tired, had no appetite, and that she didn't want to have sex with John after the abortion and what he had done to her. This whole story of the Bobbitt marriage is literally he said, she said, and honestly, I don't think that any of us will ever know the truth unless one of them flips their stories and agrees with the other. But I feel as though telling the story is important, number one, because it is a domestic violence story, and that's a conversation that needs to be had. It's a topic that needs to not be afraid to be brought up. Personally, I find the actions of both Lorena and John after the incident and the court cases to be the most telling. And I mean, you need to decide for yourself. I have my own opinion, and I'll share it with you near the end. In May of 1993, Lorena had had enough of the abuse and told John that she wanted a divorce. John hadn't been able to hold down steady work since leaving the Marines in 1991, and Lorena had become the breadwinner for the household. John began insulting her and threatening to kick her out of the house with nothing, and then he would turn around and tell her if she left, he would find her and bring her back. Lorena had already seen a divorce attorney at this point, and she needed to bring some evidence of the abuse to the lawyer. So Lorena got a tape recorder and recorded John verbally abusing her. However, one night after Lorena had recorded John abusing her, John went into her purse to steal some money. Instead, he found the tape recorder. John showed the tape recorder to Lorena and demanded to know why she had it. Lorena refused to give him an explanation, and she tried to get it back from him, but John became violent and raped Lorena that night while physically abusing her. Lorena testified in court that John kicked her and threw her into a wall, pulled her up by her hair, only to knock her down again with slaps and punches. On June 23, 1993, John went out with one of his friends. That friend was staying at the couple's home for a few days. The men were drinking heavily. According to Lorena, she had gone to bed. Now remember, this is only a couple weeks after Lorena had told him she wanted a divorce. When John got home that night, he was extremely intoxicated. He came up to the bed and informed Lorena that he wanted to have sex with her. Lorena told him she didn't want to have sex with him. Lorena testified in court that John raped her that night and that she tried to fight him, but he was smothering her by being on top of her. After the rape, Lorena was crying in the bed and asking John over and over again, why did he do this to her? John replied that he didn't care. He didn't care about her feelings, and he would have sex with her whenever he wanted. Lorena testified that she was trying to calm herself down, and she went to the kitchen for a glass of water. She stated that the kitchen was only lit by the refrigerator light, and she saw the knife. Lorena testified that once she saw the knife, all the verbal, emotional, sexual, and physical abuse that she had suffered started to play over and over in her head. She said it was like pictures, one right after the other. She grabbed the knife and headed to the bedroom where John was sleeping. John testified that he woke to Lorena grabbing his penis and that she grunted as she sliced approximately 5 inches off. He said once she had sliced his penis off, she turned and ran from the apartment. Lorena testified that she doesn't remember cutting off John's penis or leaving the house that night. Lorena stated that the next thing she remembered was when she was in her car driving. She was slowing down for a stop sign when she realized that part of her husband's penis was in her hand. Lorena testified that she was horrified when she realized what was in her hand and that she had to get rid of the penis. So she threw it out the window of the car and it landed in a field. During her cross-examination, Lorena became highly upset when relaying the realization that John's penis was in her hand. So much so that the prosecutor had to stop asking Lorena questions for a few minutes. She had to allow Lorena to try and compose herself. Lorena tried to calm herself down, and she was able to pull it together a little, but even though she was so upset, she never wavered, not once, from her testimony. In court, John testified that he did not have sex with his wife that night. Then he changed his story and said that maybe he did. He didn't remember. A police officer in court testified that John stated to him that night at the hospital that he might have had sex with his wife when he was asleep. He often did that, and if he was asleep, he wouldn't remember. I have never in my life heard of a man being capable of having sex while they were asleep, but that's just from my own experience. Send me an email if you've ever heard of a man being able to have sex while they're asleep. That night, Lorena was taken to the hospital and a rape kit was performed. There was semen found. Once the results of the rape kit came back, John changed his story again and said that they did have sex that night, but it was mutual. John underwent a 9.5-hour surgery and the doctors were able to reattach his penis. However, the doctors told him that his penis would never work properly again. Now, because Lorena had told the police that John had raped her that night, they had to charge John with something. But under Virginia law, John couldn't be charged with rape because at that time, it could only be used in cases where the couples didn't live together or the victim of the rape received significant serious injury. So the prosecutors, who were deciding the charges, apparently moonlighted as medical doctors and felt that they were in a position to judge the severity of Lorena's wounds. And they decided she was not injured enough to pursue rape charges against John. Instead, they charged him with malicious assault. Lorena was arrested and charged with malicious wounding, which, if convicted, would carry a 20-year sentence and deportation would follow that. John's trial was held in 1993. Jury members stated, when asked about the verdict, that because there were no bruises that had been photographed on Lorena from that night, and that no one heard her scream, there was really nothing they could do as there was no substantive evidence against him. And with that, they had to find him not guilty. Right before Lorena's trial started, John Bobbitt was able to make a deal with Howard Stern to have a telethon on Stern's show on New Year's Eve, and they raised $250,000 that went to John's legal bills. The two trials became a media circus. Newspapers and stand-up comedians were relentless with Bobbitt jokes. The word Bobbitt became a verb thanks to the unending media coverage. Be careful, I'll Bobbitt you, and things of that nature. Lorena's trial was held in 1994, so after John's. While Lorena's trial was taking place, John was selling John Bobbitt Love Hurts t-shirts for $20 outside the courthouse, and all funds were going to John's legal bills. As well, there was a woman with a stand selling penis-shaped candy for 10 bucks a pop. There was expert testimony during Lorena's trial that stated that John's abuse had caused a post-traumatic stress disorder or temporary insanity at the time of the carving off of the penis. Basically, the expert was saying that because of the intense level of abuse that Lorena had suffered and the rape that night, she developed a psychotic episode during which she was not aware of her actions. Lorena was found not guilty by reason of temporary insanity, but under Virginia law, she had to be sentenced to 5 weeks in a psychiatric hospital. Upon release from the hospital, Lorena was then ordered to attend weekly outpatient sessions, and she was not allowed to leave the state without court permission. Here's the thing that really sticks in my craw. By sentencing Lorena, the court is acknowledging that she suffered from, as the expert said, either PTSD or temporary insanity caused by abuse at the hands of her husband. So yes, he did all these horrible things to you, but because we did his trial first, we had to let him go free. And since you're here and you're admitting to cutting his penis off, you get a trip to the psych ward and we're going to monitor you like a criminal for the next few years. Thanks. Have a great day. Bye. And that's it. That's what happened in 1993 and 94. That's the entire story of the marriage of John and Lorena Bobbitt. But that isn't the end of the story. I want to look at what each of them have done since the trials. I think if we start with John, it might be easier for you to form an opinion. I think it'll be easier if I turn it into a timeline for us. I'm going to start the timeline that night in June. So 1993, John is attacked and his penis is severed. 1993, John is charged with malicious assault. 1993, John has his trial and is found not guilty. Between 1993 and 1994, John forms a touring band, and in an attempt to pay his legal bills, he names the band The Severed Parts. I'm telling you now, friends, I couldn't make this shit up if I tried. In 1994, on New Year's Eve, 9 days before Lorena's trial begins, John has a New Year's Eve telethon on the Howard Stern Show with naked women and a person in a giant penis costume dancing around the studio. They raise $250,000 to help pay his legal fees. Late August or early September in 1994, John is charged and convicted with misdemeanor domestic violence against his new fiance, Christina Elliott. He serves 12 days of a 15-day sentence. At trial, the judge stated, quote, "I firmly believe you have an attitude problem. Your attitude problem is caused by your drinking," unquote. In September of 94, John Bobbitt stars in a porno film. That's right. You heard me. John Bobbitt stars in a pornography film entitled John Wayne Bobbitt Uncut. When asked why he would do this, he states, quote, "A porno seemed the best way to show my penis worked, only it wasn't all the way healed yet. I realize now that was the point," unquote. I want some points for all of the restraint that I am showing during this section of the podcast today. In 1995, John and Lorena's divorce is finalized. In 1996, John accepts an offer from Howard Stern to have reconstruction surgery on his penis in order to make it bigger. In 1996, after the reconstruction surgery, John stars in a second porno entitled Frankenpenis to show off the new improved penis. Frankenpenis. You heard me right. Yes, it's Frankenpenis. And here we go. Are you ready for this one, folks? You're not ready. Take a sip of tea. In 1997, John becomes ordained as a minister in the Life Baptist Church. That's right, he's now a minister. In August of 1998, John appears on the WWF's Monday Night Raw is War television program. It's now called the WWE, for those of you who are younger. And he was featured on the show with Val Venus. In 1999, John is charged and pleads guilty to a felony charge of attempted grand larceny after stealing $140,000 worth of clothing in Nevada. He is sentenced to 5 years probation. Also in 1999, John is charged and convicted of harassing an ex-girlfriend, Desiree A. Luz, L-U-Z, sentenced to 30 days in jail. In 2002, John is charged with domestic violence of his third wife, Joanna Farrell, but found not guilty, but then sent to jail for parole violation, and the parole was from the clothing theft in 99. In 2004, John is charged two more times with domestic violence against Joanna Farrell, but found not guilty. In 2004, he files for divorce from Joanna Farrell. In 2009, John and Lorena appear on the Insider television program for a joint interview. Lorena stated that John is still sending her letters claiming his love for her and making business propositions to capitalize on their fame. At first, John denies this, but quickly changes his tune when Lorena produces the letters on the TV show. In 2014, John is involved in a car accident and incurs a broken neck and a slipped disc. He makes a full recovery, and he was not at fault for the accident. From the accident, he received a disability settlement. In 2016, John has penis surgery to reverse the enlargement he had previously gifted to him by Howard Stern. As of 2019, John is living in Las Vegas and spends his time searching for the hidden treasure of Forrest Fenn. But unfortunately for John, a 32-year-old medical student found Fenn's treasure on June 6th of 2020 in Wyoming. So once again, John comes up short. I'm so sorry. I couldn't help myself. About 760 miles short, and that's the last thing I could find on John Bobbitt. As for Lorena, since the trial and finishing all her court-ordered sanctions, Lorena has dedicated herself in becoming an advocate for domestic abuse survivors. After the trial, she established an organization where Lorena would go to different abuse shelters and provide things that the women and children needed after escaping a domestic violence situation. She would also provide activities for the mothers and their children to do while being inside the shelters. Lorena fell in love and married, according to Lorena, her soulmate. They have a daughter. In 2018, Lorena created the Lorena Gallo Foundation. It is a nonprofit organization, and their mission statement is as follows. The Lorena Gallo Foundation's mission is to expand domestic violence and sexual assault prevention, education, emergency response resources, and community engagement activities that will improve outcomes for survivors and their children. The organization describes themselves as the following. The Lorena Gallo Foundation is a new nonprofit organization founded in 2018 by Lorena Gallo Bobbitt to provide domestic violence and sexual assault prevention, intervention, and awareness services in Prince William County, Virginia. Lorena Gallo Bobbitt, an icon in the domestic violence sexual assault prevention movement, founded the Lorena Gallo Foundation with a goal to build a network of supportive services and safe spaces for victims to share. And that's the foundation that Lorena has created for domestic abuse survivors. Lorena has made many, many appearances and given talks on the effects of domestic abuse, where and how to find help, and relaying her experience. Lorena's goal is to create help and support for survivors of domestic abuse like she needed when all of this happened to her. Lorena has been able to develop a sense of humor regarding the incident. She appeared on the Steve Harvey Show in 2016, where she laughed along with Steve Harvey as he exclaimed, "Girl, I'm never sleeping with you around. I'm staying up all the damn night." And when Steve Harvey asked her about her now husband and whether he ever brings up the subject of the dismemberment, she laughs and says, "No, he never brings it up." Harvey states, laughing, "Any man who would not bring up that conversation is your soulmate." The two enjoy a hearty laugh, but then Lorena becomes serious and begins to speak about domestic violence and how she has tried to highlight the issue, help those survivors and their children in her community, and what can be done about it nationally. Even as recent as 2023, in an interview on the Drew Barrymore Show, she explains that she looks at her life as a big tree, and there are branches that grow off that tree. Some of the branches are serious issues that need to be talked about, but some of those branches contain humor regarding her story. Because, as Lorena states, it is part of being human. She stated in the interview that she had to come to an understanding that there will always be jokes, and to understand that and accept that is part of the healing process. It took years for her to get where she is in her healing process, but she is in a good space now. This is one of the most amazing things about Lorena, I think, anyway. In the interview on the Drew Barrymore Show, she said she was lucky to have doctors to help her through her ordeal. This woman, after everything that she's been through, the ridicule, the punchlines, the domestic abuse, the trial, she's able to look at everything and accept it and find something positive. And in my opinion, she is quite noble to create and help others who find themselves in similar situations to what she was in. Looking at the actions of these two people after the trials had concluded, I 100% believe Lorena was the victim of horrific domestic violence of every type. Was she right in slicing off his penis? No. Violence is never the answer. Do I believe she entered a short psychosis created from the rape that night? Absolutely. It doesn't justify what she did, but it does make it a little bit more understandable. Did John deserve to have his penis sliced clean off? No. No one deserves to have any violence done to them. But I will say this. My inside immature psyche was that day, and still does, sometimes scream, "Yes! Well done, Lorena! You made a slice for all women who have ever been a victim! And to John, I fucking hope it hurt like hell, you asshat!" But I digress. Before we end this week's show, I want to take a minute and I want to look at some academic research from some of the forerunners in the study of domestic violence. I'm doing this because I believe that if something like this were to happen now, there would still be the jokes and the punchlines, but I also believe that there is a larger platform out there now for a conversation to take place, a global dialogue, if you will, that should have taken place in 1993 regarding domestic violence. Sociologist Evan Stark is one of the leading researchers in America on domestic violence. He states, "It makes perfect sense that a woman in that situation would strike out against the organ that personifies manhood. The penis is an extraordinary symbol of power and domination in a relationship," says Stark. "There are many men, especially batterers, for whom the penis is an extension of their psychological selves. It is a weapon. So hurting the penis is a way of attacking the guy's power." I understand with Stark's statement why he would feel this way, and I'm not trying to get all gender discriminating here, but Stark is a man, and to many men, if not the majority, the penis is the symbol of manhood to them. It is the number one part of themselves that differs them from the woman. So I feel it is only natural for a man to correlate a physical attack on a penis to an attack on that person's manhood. Is he wrong with his analysis? Absolutely not. Very well could have been Lorena's subconscious attacking the one thing that distinguishes a man. I believe that in that state of psychosis brought on by the rape, Lorena's subconscious attacked the one thing that attacked her, John's penis. Am I wrong in making this correlation? No. I just have a different opinion that has been created from my own experience and my experience with those in psychotic states. I find that when someone is in a psychotic state, their thought processes tend to be of a more basic level, such as an eye for an eye type of thought process. Sociologist Lenore Walker wrote the definitive textbook on the battered woman syndrome. Her book was entitled The Battered Woman. She offers a definition of the battered woman syndrome. Today, we would probably call it battered person's syndrome, but back in the 90s, it was battered woman syndrome. According to Lenore Walker, the battered woman is traumatized by a vicious cycle of violence, characterized by a building of tension, serious incidents of battering, followed by a period of loving care. It's actually called the triangle of abuse. When you're on that triangle, it's very hard to get off of it. It's actually very hard to recognize that you're on this looping triangle. In one corner, you have the building of the tension. In the second corner, you have the incidents of battering or other types of abuse. And then the third corner of the triangle is a period of loving care. And it just keeps going and going and going. As the cycle repeats itself, the woman's fear of heightened aggression and flashbacks to previous abuse produce in her a state of learned helplessness. Now, before you lose your cool, let me explain about learned helplessness, okay? First, battered women are not helpless at all. As a matter of fact, they are extremely resourceful and resilient and successful in staying alive and minimizing the outward signs of abuse that they are suffering, such as bruises, cuts, scars. However, according to learned helplessness theory, which is what Lenore Walker was talking about, that explains that in order for these women to keep their core being intact, they have to give something up. They give up the belief that they can escape from the abuser. They have to give up this belief in order to maintain their critical thinking. And they do this and need their critical thinking capabilities in order to have the mental capability to create the necessary coping strategies to survive inside the abusive relationship. So when you meet a woman who has survived and escaped an abusive relationship, try looking at her as the actual warrior that she is. Because in order for her to have escaped that horrific life, she not only had to have the strength to create and implement coping strategies to survive, but she had to revive her belief that she could escape. And then she had to devise a way to get out alive. And as well, in many cases, they have to do this for their children as well. So when you look at her as the warrior that she is, tell her she is a warrior. Build her up. Keep her going, because she probably needs to hear it at that point. If you think someone is in danger or being hurt in any way, please call the police. At the very least, ask for a welfare check. I've said this before and I will keep saying it. What is the worst that will happen? The police will go to the door and everything is fine? Now, in these types of situations, domestic violence, abusers are for the most part highly effective manipulators, which is one of the common traits of domestic abusers. So it may just play out that someone in fact is being abused, but the abuser is able to manipulate the police and have them leave with nothing being done. If you call the police and that happens, don't get upset about it. Don't get angry and say, well, what's the point of me calling? They don't do anything anyways. Keep calling. Call every time you hear the abuse. I don't care if it's 3 minutes after the police leave. If you hear abuse happening, call. Eventually, hopefully, the victim will say something to the police when they arrive. And at the very least, you were able to stop the abuse that you were hearing that day, even if it's only for a few minutes. Wow. I bet you didn't think that case was going to go that way, did you? This was a case that I have been wanting to research for a very long time, and I'm very thankful that I was able to do it. Thank you for joining me again from the witness stand. If you enjoyed the show, please give us a 5-star review. It really does help the show. And visit our Patreon page, become an eyewitness to receive access to the Bitter Bits. Sometimes they will be shorter stories that aren't long enough to be an entire show, and sometimes I may look at academic research to help explain some of the crimes that we discuss here on the main show. I hope you have a wonderful week. Be kind to yourself and enjoy your day today. If you or someone you know are in a domestic violence situation, please reach out to someone. There is help out there for you. This has been a Bitter Witness production.